Chapter 21. The Prismatic Galleries. Wonders and horrors greeted them as Fabius and the others travelled through the convoluted interior of the tier. They found themselves passing amidst galleries of such size and scope that even Fabius could scarcely comprehend their absolute enormity. The tier was not a flat plane, but instead a series of concentric sub-tiers, each at a varying height, connected by curving stairwells and long walkways. All home to immense galleries, filled with more things than any living mortal might explore in a lifetime. Fabius's enhanced perceptions faltered, stretched to their limits for the first time since he'd gazed upon the unfiltered expanse of the Eye of Terror. All about them was the wreckage of a million impossible civilizations, placed and catalogued with inhuman precision. Unimaginable masterpieces of art and architecture shared space with scenes of indescribable horror, all of it arranged according to some impenetrable symmetry. Here, the pale light of an eternal last sunset shone forever upon carvings of painful beauty. There, a warband of orcs conducted a silent, unending rampage upon a species of unfamiliar, blue-shelled invertebrate. Across the way, a looming shape of many angles glared down at the intruders with stoic fury in its innumerable, unmoving eyes. Fabius and his consortium moved at the heart of a phalanx of Emperor's children. Palos was evidently determined not to let them out of his sight, if at all possible. Maesha and Maeshana paced to either side of Fabius, having appointed themselves his bodyguards. The Dlandhounds seemed unnerved by their surroundings. He'd brought no others, reasoning that their presence might elicit undue hostility from Palos and his warriors. Mutants scuttled, loped and stalked in an unruly mass around the tight ranks of the Emperor's children, filling the silence with their cries. The heavy shapes of the war mutants stalked among them, following placidly behind the tracked forms of their servitor overseers. Diomat plodded in the wake of the renegades, his red gaze sweeping blankly across the galleries that rose wild around them.
"This place is a tomb," Skarlagrim said.
He strode alongside Fabius, his axe resting in the crook of his arm. For once, his helmet was locked firmly in place.
"No, it is a museum," Fabius said.
Their voices echoed strangely through the long gallery, as if the distance sought to swallow up all sound.
"These are exhibits, petrified at the moment of collection, or else later posed for best effect."
"That is the largest orc I've ever seen," Savona murmured,
staring up at a towering 12-meter-tall monstrosity that loomed in a nearby nook.
"And his weaponry."
The frozen creature wore a crude exoskeleton, far in advance of anything the orcs now might conceive of. Indeed, from his initial examination, Fabius suspected that it might be in advance of his own battle plate.
"A croak," he murmured. "One of the first orcs. I read about them in the Eldari texts. I have long theorized that the orcs are a form of organic weapons system, a rogue biological agent unleashed during some ancient apocalyptic conflict. There's too much about their internal workings that seems designed rather than evolved."
"We killed them easily enough at Ulanor," Skarlagrim said.
"Nothing that big, I'd wager,"
Korag gurgled. He stroked the head of his beast, which lolloped in his wake. The Gravewarden chuckled wetly.
"If there was ever a place designed to divert the curious, this would be it. Look there. What do you think that is, or was?"
He indicated a spheroid of 2 meters in height, composed of rough, leathery skin. A large, albeit withered, sensory organ of some sort sat at the top of the sphere, and around the upper body clustered pale tentacles that dangled to the ground. Fabius peered at the strange creature.
"Fascinating."
His hands itched to collect samples, but he hesitated. He suspected that any interference with the exhibits would elicit some form of alarm. Whatever presence controlled this world so far seemed to have only a passive interest in their presence. But given the technology at work here, he had no interest in provoking a more hostile response. He heard a sudden intake of breath and turned to find Sakara staring at one of the galleries. A winding chamber of statuary extending back into an enormous recess within the green-veined stonework that made up the bulk of their surroundings. Within the chamber, which had been fashioned to resemble an underground cavern lined by intricately carved columns and swooping decorative arches, red armoured figures clashed with blue amid thick falls of shadow and unmoving cascades of debris.
"The Catacombs of Kalth," Sakara said softly.
He took a step forward, and before Fabius could stop him, he was wandering among the frozen figures. Palos brought the expedition to a halt. He gestured.
"Well, fetch your cur back, Manflayer, lest we lose him in this madness."
"Mind your tongue, Palos. Remember which of us is indispensable and which of us is a glorified bodyguard," Fabius said as he hurried after the word-bearer.
He found the Diabolist standing at the heart of the battle. Sakara indicated one of the crimson-armoured word-bearers.
"Hard light holograms," he said, in a hollow voice. "Listen."
Fabius did. A faint susurrus, as of many voices at a great distance. The sound of war at a distance of thousands of years.
"The underground war," Sakara continued. "I was here with my brothers in the Black Comet fighting in these depths.
I was under the impression that those who fought at Kalth were sent there to die," Fabius said.
A rumour, but a persistent one, especially given the word-bearer's propensity for internal purges. Sakara nodded, still studying the immobile faces of the warriors around them.
"It was a test, a trial of worthiness. Lorgar sent us to die so that we might live."
Fabius laughed.
"And you passed it, did you?"
"The test did not end here," Sakara said.
He looked at Fabius.
"You should know that better than anyone, heretic. Our tests never end. Our worth is judged only in the striving."
Fabius snorted and looked away.
"Trust a fanatic to..." "Eh?"
He paused, stepped closer to a reeling ultramarine. The warrior was helmetless, his face daubed in blood and dust. Fabius peered at him, enhancing the scope of his vision again and again, until, at last, he saw it. A faint tremor in the warrior's eye, as of a contraction slowed to an infinitesimal crawl. He stepped back with a curse.
"They're not holograms."
Sakara jolted back from the frozen word-bearers.
"What?"
"They're not holograms. At least, not the way we understand them. There's something else. But they're alive and conscious."
Fabius turned, staggered by the conceit of it. A living diorama wrought from hard light and some arcane trickery. A form of stasis beyond his own fumbling attempts. A shout from the group drew his attention. Diomat stalked through the milling mass of mutants and renegades, his head cocked to the shadowy galleries rising above them.
"Something is here!"
The dreadnought turned, servos whining.
"All around us!"
"I see nothing," Palos said.
"Then perhaps you should take the blinders from your eyes," Fabius said acidly.
He could feel it now. Something was watching them, though he could not say where the unseen observer was. The stultifying silence of this place was worse even than that of the dead craft worlds he had plundered.
"Contact the gunships. Perhaps a long-range sensor sweep."
"We've lost contact with them," Palos said flatly.
He turned, staring back the way they'd come.
"Listen."
The boom of heavy stubbers was faintly audible, the sound swallowed up and dispersed rather than echoing. The vox crackled as Fabius tried to contact Belephus. Something was interfering with the frequency. He turned to the word-bearer.
"Sakara, what do your pets see?"
"Nothing. I appear to have lost them."
The word-bearer sounded chagrined. He looked around, fingers tapping at the demon flasks hanging from his armor.
They escape your control?
No.
Then what?
Fabius rounded on the red-armored diabolist.
This is your only skill, and you say that you have somehow failed in it?
They are gone. I do not know why.
Sakara reached for a flask.
I will call up others.
Fabius caught his wrist.
No. I was a fool to ever trust the senses of such beings, especially in a place like this.
Further recriminations died on his tongue as he caught sight of a shadowy shape scuttling down the incline of a gallery frame. Light seemed to bend around the wide, spidery shape, rendering it all but invisible, save for the green glow of its many eyes. The shape leapt with a curious undulation and revealed itself as a silvery, scarab-like entity made of a substance Fabius thought was similar to that of the sands above. It put him in mind of a massive spider moving across an invisible web. It sprang onto Diomat with an eerie, rattling hiss, proboscis sparking with green lightning. The dreadnought tore the arachnid shape apart with a flex of his claws. He sent the pieces hurtling in different directions.
Brothers, beware! We are beset by Xenos filth!
Fabius looked up. More spider shapes followed the first. 10, 20, 30 or more, clambering down from the heights all around them, as if they'd somehow disturbed an unseen nest. He cursed. A trap. And they had walked right into it. Arian studied the flowering tendrils that wrapped themselves around his vambrace with keen interest. The hydroponics bay of the Vesalius was a nightmare jungle of creeping greenery. Most of it poisonous, or hungry, or both. Here, the bastard offspring of a thousand species of plant life grew all but unchecked. The air was wet and thick with condensation and toxic gases that could eat away at the seals of his power armor if he stood still for too long. Roots crept thick across the deck, wriggling into the cracks in the metal, finding sustenance among the nutrient vats that fed the bay. And great masses of splayed vine and creeper had woven themselves in among the upper gantries and stairwells. Heaving blossoms of every imaginable color dotted the greenery, adding their heady stink to the miasma. The visual feed in his helmet isolated and identified the inhabitants of this green hell. Most of the plants in the bay had some medicinal or nutritional value. The brackish creepers that occupied the highest gantries made for an adequate dietary paste, suitable for the uncultured palates of the Vesalius's crew. The scabrous blossoms that huddled beneath the central stairwell secreted a pollen that could be synthesized into a suitably potent, not to mention addictive, narcotic. Other plants could be processed into dermal balms and analgesics, if one had the knowledge. Arian was among the few who did. Phytology was a dying art among those few apothecaries remaining in the eye. Oh, they could create drugs or brew alcohol, but little else. The chief apothecary, on the other hand, insisted that those who aspired to his tutelage first familiarize themselves with the width and breadth of the natural sciences. Among them, epigenetics, aerobiology, biochemistry, and even, for one brief century, biosemiotics. Science and medicine were inextricably tied together in the philosophy of Fabius Bile. To perform one, an individual must have a grounding in the other. To be an apothecary, one must grasp the whole of the thing, rather than simply its component parts. For Arian, the hydroponics bay was a place of quiet contemplation. Few others dared impose themselves on it. He heard the scrape of a soft tread, and saw several of the plants react to a new taste on the air. Igori, he said, in greeting, recognizing the sound of her approach. She was one of the few of her kind willing to brave the dangers of this place.
They have attacked the apothecarium, Igori spoke bluntly. A plant stretched a tendril towards her. She drew her knife and sliced through it without taking her eyes from Arian. Killed my kin.
Arian paused, bloody meat dangling from his fingers. He had expected as much, though not so quickly. Alkanex had ensured that the bulk of those loyal to the chief apothecary or at least the status quo, had been sent to the planet below. An old trick, that, ancient even by the time it was used at Istvan. Now, the prefect moved to establish control of the upper decks, the weapons bays, and the flight decks especially. It was inevitable, but we hold our blow until he has returned. He flipped the piece of meat he held to the plants and looked at her, his once handsome features impassive. Do you understand, Igori? Hold tight to your kin's leashes. We are poised on the knife edge. Only with proper timing will we make the perfect cut. He patted one of the blades sheathed at his side. Too soon, and we may well wreck the ship, attempting to save it. She nodded, and he wondered whether it was in agreement or understanding. After a moment, she said,
What if he is wrong?
The question was so unexpected, he almost dropped the bowl of meat. He looked at her, seeing her for the first time in a long time. She was no longer a child, or even young. It was easy to forget how brief their lives were, even ones as enhanced as these.
Wrong? He asked. How so?
About this. About all of it. She looked away, as if ashamed. He says, wait, but what if that is wrong? What if we had a way to win without him? Would that not be better? Would it not please him to see us move on our own, to secure victory in his name? He said nothing for a few moments. Then, slowly, he said, That is not for me to say. You are not slaves, like the mutants. Servitude is not in you, and he did not make you for that purpose. But even so, he created you, and you owe him fealty.
Not fealty, she said. Love. He made us, and we love him. We can do nothing else. But he made us to hunt, to kill prey. And now the prey challenges us, and he says, wait. Why?
She absently cleaned her knife on her trousers and sheathed it.
I can no longer hunt. He will not let me. But I can do this, even if it angers him.
Arian knew then what she was asking. Not permission, but understanding of a decision already made. The chief apothecary might be blind to it, but Arian was not. They were no longer children, but something else. And here was their first step. If they could do this thing, if they could defy their creator and wage war, then the galaxy would hold no further horrors for them. He looked at her. These nails I have in my head are love writ in steel. A suicide pact made in the name of our father. A condemnation of all that we might have been by the one who should have led us to glory. For him we sacrificed all, and for him we now die. A little bit at a time. Meat for the beast. He tapped the bowl of bloody chunks, as if for emphasis. But Angron's rage is but a sea spray of blood in this galaxy's endless ocean of murder. A single sanguine drop in a wine-dark sea. Once I realized that, the rest was easy. Arian lifted a blossom with a finger. The razor-thin petals scraped against the ceramite of his gauntlet. He turned. It's all the same sea, whatever your course. Wherever you go, there you are. Igori smiled.
A good philosophy.
A pragmatic philosophy. He tossed another chunk of meat to the snarling creepers. The vines tore at the chunk with savage abandon. Death is the end of study, and I have not yet completed my education. So I will live whatever the nails in my head wish, and whatever my father wishes.
You defy him, the one who made you.
Sometimes a father must be defied, so that the child might prosper. Arian looked at her. Do you understand?
Yes, honored Arian. Thank you.
She bowed, turned, and left the hydroponics bay.
Arion did not try and stop her. In time, he turned back to his plants. As he fed them, he wondered whether he had made the right choice. The spider things had not come alone. More of them came out of the walls. Heretofore, hidden alcoves gaped wide, disgorging silvery, skeletal shapes, humanoid rather than insect-like, but no less disturbing. They moved with steady speed across the catwalks and gantries, advancing towards the Emperor's children in ever-growing numbers. They were of myriad textures, colours and markings, alike only in their general shape, and the strange, flickering weapons they clutched in fleshless hands. Strands of green lightning lashed from the barrels of these weapons, cascading across the front ranks of mutants. Malformed warriors were reduced to scattered, greasy atoms, with barely enough time to scream. The invaders replied in kind. Bolters thundered, punching through metal forms and casting them down. But the relentless advance continued, even as the fallen pulled themselves to their feet, broken bodies repairing themselves before the astonished eyes of the renegades. Fabius turned, his armor's sensors recording everything.
Living metal! Fascinating! Skarlagrim, I would like a sample, if convenient.
Get it yourself, Skarlagrim snarled.
He took careful aim with his bolt pistol and fired, knocking one of their attackers sprawling. In moments, it was picking itself back up.
Why won't they die?
The apothecary roared, pumping more shots into the automaton.
Self-repairing systems. Short of absolute destruction, I doubt we possess the means to stop them.
Fabius glanced at Korag.
What about you, Grave Warden? What sort of plagues are you carrying in that cauldron you call Battleplate?
I may have something, but it will require us to abandon our position, lest it devour our armor and weapons along with our foes.
Korag hefted his weapon, an ancient stormbolter wet with oil and rot, and ejected the vaguely skull-shaped ammunition drum. He retrieved another from the reload rack on the back of his armor, this one marked with esoteric hazard sigils, and slammed it into place. The modified stormbolter made a sloshing sound.
We must push them back. Put as much room as possible between us and them.
Easy enough. Palos, you and the others fall back on my mark.
Fabius signaled to the closest of his overseers.
Unleash the war, mutants.
The servitors reacted to the order as one. The somnolent war mutants crouched behind the front lines, suddenly surged upright as chem dispensers fired and their cortical implants were remotely activated. They bounded forward with thunderous howls, barreling into the relentless metal ranks of the enemy. As the war mutants fell to their task with gusto, Fabius surreptitiously tapped a button on his vambrace. The signal activated the pain implants in the rest of the surviving mutants. The deformed beasts leapt to join their monstrous brethren, shooting, stabbing, and battering the metal guardians from their feet. Tides of flesh and metal met with a sound like water slapping stone. Palos and the others fell back, still firing.
Korag, at your convenience, Fabius said.
The hulking apothecary hefted his weapon and advanced towards the approaching automatons. He fired as he went. The shots trailed an ugly heat in their wake, and where they pierced the air, it took on an oily sheen. When they struck home, a bilious gas spewed from the craters punched into the skeletal machines. Wherever the gas touched, the silvery metal blackened and corroded, as did the flesh of those mutants unfortunate enough to be caught in its shroud. The front rank of machines collapsed, consumed by Korag's concoction. The Grave Warden continued to fire until the ammunition drum clicked dry. Piles of corroded metal and seared bodies of mutants crunched beneath his tread as he retreated. The gas cloud swept over the advancing ranks, eating away at them.
Now would be a good time to retreat,
Korag said.
The cloud will dissipate soon enough, and it is not large enough to devour them all.
Fabius turned. More silvery shapes were approaching from behind them, bleeding out of the winding galleries like ghosts.
Diomat, clear our way, he said.
None may block our path,
Diomat bellowed, tromping forward at a ponderous charge. He struck the approaching phalanx of automatons like a thunderbolt, scattering them and opening a gap in their lines. The dreadnought caught up a struggling machine warrior and swung it about like an improvised flail, battering at the others.
Reap my malediction, he roared. Shatter and die in the name of the third. Come, brothers, join me in my wrath. Children of the Emperor, death to his foes!
Fall back, Fabius said, gesturing with torment for the others to follow Diomat.
Let Korag's weapon do its work. Back to the gunships.
Emperor's children thudded past him, retreating with as much discipline as they could muster. The sound of more alcoves opening echoed down from the upper sub-tiers, even as they fell back towards the immense causeway and the gunships beyond. It galled him to retreat so soon, but there was nothing for it. There seemed to be no end to these creatures, and the forces they'd brought were proving unequal to the task. Better an ignominious retreat than total destruction. Survival provided an opportunity for success later. Torment snarled in warning, and he spun, crushing a metal ribcage. A blast of energy scorched the edge of his coat as the creature fell, and he stamped on its head. Something was controlling them, of that much he was certain. Like the nanomachines above, there was a guiding intelligence at work here, one that could be disrupted if only he could locate it. He reached down and ripped the flattened skull from its chassis, cracking it open in the process. There might be something in it of use. The metal oozed about his probing fingers, as if trying to resist his intrusion. Tucking Torment beneath his arm, he continued to work as he walked, while the battle roared about him. Mesha and Meshana stuck close beside him as they retreated, firing their weapons with disciplined precision. Diomat roared, wrenching silvery skeletons apart with his power claws, his chassis and limbs scorched black in places. Fabius caught sight of Savona, smashing an opponent from its feet with her maul, and Sakara, surrounded by the elemental shapes of lesser Neverborn, hurling a flask filled with raging demon shapes.
Any more tricks?
He said, glancing at Korag, as the latter trudged along in his wake, alchemical vents spewing acidic smoke.
Another plague or three, perhaps?
He cursed as the head tried to seal itself around his hand. There seemed to be nothing within it, which was impossible. There had to be some form of control mechanism.
Nothing that wouldn't reduce this place to slag around us, Korag grunted. And if we want to have any hope of finding your gene ship intact, it would be best to avoid that.
Stormbolter reloaded. He let rip at a bevy of silvery shapes advancing from the walls to the left. The automatons collapsed, but almost immediately began to rise again. Pazuz fell upon them, noxious drool reducing the struggling machines to steaming wreckage. Fabius tossed the head aside in disgust as Palos fell back, joining him. They were passing over the sloped causeway between two sub-tiers. The steep path made for a natural defensive position, forcing their pursuers to slow their advance. Far below, Fabius could see a strange, flickering radiance leaking up from the heart of the structure.
We cannot leave without what we came for, Manflayer,
Palos growled. His helmet bore blackened scars from numerous near misses, and his friction axe was humming shrilly.
If you would like to chop your way through, then by all means go ahead. But I intend to regroup and return in force, perhaps after an orbital bombardment or two.
Fabius frowned as a crackling beam of jade energy swept the life from a nearby legionary, reducing him to drifting motes.
Maybe three.
You will not fulfill our mission.
Fabius glared at him.
If you are accusing me of cowardice, you will have to come to the point more quickly.
I am merely making certain, Palos grunted.
An instant later, he spun on his heel, friction axe splitting the air. Mesha sucked in the air for a scream as the monomolecular axe bit into his chest, but no sound emerged from the Glandhound's throat. Meishana snarled and lunged, drawing her own blade as she leapt on Pallas's back. The knife sank into a gap in his armor, but the renegade didn't hesitate. Amethyst fingers snagged her by the head, and he wrenched her from her perch. Before he could strike, Fabius drove Torment's haft into the side of the other space marine's head, knocking him off balance. Pallas cast Meishana aside and spun his axe about, slashing at Fabius. The blade nearly caught him in the abdomen, but he caught it on Torment's haft at the last moment. They struggled for a moment, awkwardly perched on the edge of the pathway, as the battle spun on around them, heedless of their private struggle.
"Are you mad?" Fabius spat. "Now is not the time for this."
"Now is the perfect time, Clone Lord," Pallas growled. "When none of your beasts can come to your aid, when your guard is down, and when my hand is at your throat. If we salvage nothing else from this, the Prefect will at least reward me well for your scalp."